All right, this week's Parsha Tetzaveh, and in part it deals with the inauguration of the office of the Kihuna, of the priesthood, with Aaron the priest, the high priest, and his four sons, and it talks about their specific special clothing. So the title of class is How to Shop for Clothes. We'll start off with a little video about that. So, as they say, let's go to the videotape. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Hi, my beautiful friends. How are you doing? It's Mimi here today. And today's video is actually going to be me sharing with you some of my personal tips on how to shop and how to make the whole shopping for clothes and accessories an easier experience. I don't know, some of you know and some of you don't know that in my previous background, back in the day, I used to be a fashion stylist and an image consultant, so I would help people shop for clothes. And of course, with that experience, I've learned a lot, and you know, I've helped people build a really good wardrobe that kind of goes with their image and their whole, you know, personality and everything. So today I'm going to be sharing the same tips I would share with people, let's say, on a first meeting. And also, these are the tips I personally use when I go shopping to make my life easier, because I know shopping can be overwhelming, confusing, time-consuming, with all these options and all these stores and now online, you know, there's so many different websites, so these tips are going to help you out. So let's begin. Tip number one, before you actually go shopping, sit down and make a list of everything you need to buy. That's probably one of the most important steps of the shopping process. It's almost like before going grocery shopping. I mean, this applies to grocery shopping too. If you're in a store and you're hungry, you're going to buy anything. You know that because you're just hungry and you'll grab anything just to kind of satisfy the hunger. Same with clothing and accessories. If you feel like you have nothing, so you feel hungry, like I have nothing to wear, and you go to a store, you're going to grab things you don't need. You're going to just grab a whole bunch of junk. When you get home, you might end up with a lot of things you don't need or a lot of things you already have in your wardrobe. So before you go shopping, get inspired. You know, go on Pinterest, watch some YouTube videos, go through some, you know, fashion magazines, and look at the things you like and look at the things you want to have and things that you don't have in your wardrobe already. And make a list and be very descriptive. So let's say you saw a picture and the girl was wearing a yellow dress. So you say, to buy yellow dress ruffles. You know, so kind of give yourself tips. Short, studded, you know, white dress shirt, I don't know, whatever it is, and be as detailed as you want, because what that will do to your brain when you're shopping is actually subconsciously you're going to end up seeing the stuff you're looking for. Like, this works miracles. So before you go shopping, make sure to make it to buy list. The second most important tip when shopping is to only buy your color. Now, this might be a little confusing to some of you, because personally, before I took image consulting in school, I had no idea about color analysis and colors, the whole, you know, image consulting world.
All right. Just a little, with a little taste of, okay, I'm sure. Let's get to the actual, the actual sheet here. All right, question to you both. Why is clothing shopping so overwhelming, time-consuming, and confusing? We're banking on you here. I'm not sure David feels the same way, but I'm going to go to David also.
I have bad trauma from my mom was a shopper, so I have gone the complete other way. I avoid it at all costs. Ugh.
So it's so painful.
Yeah,
it has so much negativity associated with that. You are you're involved in it in the absolute minimal way.
Yes. Yeah, I would essentially wear the same outfit every day if I could.
If you could get away with that, okay. I hear that now. Why do most people find clothes shopping overwhelming, time consuming, confusing?
Well, I feel like a lot of people are banking on, they have to look good, but what other people think of them and what is in style and what looks good, but what's fashionable, what's acceptable, what fits well. Plus now there are a lot of options.
And what's affordable.
Right. Yeah.
All right. I'm turning to David. Is shopping for clothes the same for men as it's for women?
I would probably say no, but depending on the gentleman, it could be.
David, can you speak up a little bit? We can hardly hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Much better.
I would say probably not as difficult for men, but I'm sure some gentlemen feel that way.
And why is that?
I think, you know, depending on the personality, the amount of importance someone bases on their look, on how they appear toward others. Or for example, when I was younger, I was very indecisive when shopping, so it would take me a long time to choose clothing. Whereas now I know what I like and it's pretty easy.
Right. Now, look, if you're for example, just picking some famous people for a moment, people from The Voice, like Adam Levine, the lead singer from Maroon 5, every time the show is on, he has a completely different look, maybe even a different hair, definitely a hairstyle, could be even a hair color, and he never wears the same outfit twice, ever. Then on the same show, you got Blake Shelton, who is a country singer, who seems to be wearing the exact same clothes every single time, which is not true. But, you know, that's his look is basically, you know, a country singer has to look like they work on a farm. So essentially, it's some sort of flannel shirt with basically a pair of jeans and boots, you know, and maybe some ornamental belt and maybe a little, you know, cowboy ranch style jacket. That's it. So, but what makes, just to add a little more, the reason why it can be found as overwhelming, time consuming, and confusing is because clothing is not just for utility. It's not about protecting my body from the elements. What is it about? What is the essence of clothing?
Projection, maybe?
Projection of what?
Of oneself, one's aspiration, you know, toward others.
100%. This is the finely tuned social image that we want to present to the community. And that is, you know, in a certain sense, that's the mask we put on before we leave the house. You know what I mean? So we're nervous about it. And we want to, and therefore a lot of thought. Now, women, we could get another element. It's more difficult shopping because the social pressures upon women for clothing and image and look is overwhelmingly more for a guy. Guy does not have to deal with the issue of makeup. A guy does not have to deal with the issue of accessories. A guy does not have to deal with the issue of matching shoes. You know what I mean? There's a whole, and not to mention does not deal with the issues of all the body shape issues that are haunt the average woman. You know, do I look fat in this? And what is everybody else wearing? And I'm going to go to MJE and I'm going to be judged. And there's a competition and what's going on. And it can get, if a person is very involved in that competition, then it's a very stressful experience. Which, of course, begs question number three. How would a Torah image advisor, which we had before, we had an image advisor, consult you on your upcoming clothes shopping session? And we'll get to that. I'm just going to hear your initial thoughts, and we'll get that's going to be also our destination. So the question is, how would a Terra Image Advisor consult you on your upcoming clothes shopping session?
I'm thinking they would advise on issues of modesty, making sure that you maintain a nice level of modesty.
What now? The quest, of course, what that's the loaded term. Well, what is modesty?
Right. Well, that's a good question.
Why I'm asking it.
Yeah, it definitely varies.
Is modesty limited to exposure of skin?
No.
Or if a woman or a man was fully covered up, are they necessarily modest?
No. Yeah, I've seen some really tight stuff. They're all covered, but it's really tight.
Right. So there are. So it's not about that. So what is the definition of modest clothing? Or let's call it a working definition, and we'll refine it on down. And does it apply to men and women? Is modest clothing only an issue for men or for women? For women.
I'd say it applies to both in different aspects.
All right. So what will be your working? When does a person know that they're wearing modest clothing? What will be a working definition, and we'll get into it more in depth.
Maybe price point is an aspect of that.
All right, so elaborate upon that, David.
Well, you could buy a suit for $10,000, or you could buy a suit for $400.
So if a guy's wearing a $10,000, if you're wearing a $10,000 suit, that is a custom-made suit.
Right.
So is that modest or not modest?
It's not modest.
Why not?
It's unnecessary.
Well, is it not modest if it's wasteful? Are you saying that because it's a waste of money?
Right, monetarily, I mean.
So that's not a person could be being involved in unnecessary luxury, but is that make the, let's say the person bought a classic, blue pinstripe suit, which is like a classic conservative suit, but it's made from the very finest wool. It was hand cut, hand sewn, and carefully put together by the best tailor in New York City. Is that modest or not modest? What do you guys say?
I think in the Torah context, I don't think the price of the clothing is as relevant as how revealing the clothing is in terms of the body.
You're going with skin.
Right. I think that's of paramount importance in this context.
Why? In other words, why is a woman with, let's say, a woman or a guy, let's say a woman revealing cleavage or excessive cleavage, or a guy who's wearing a shirt open to his middle of his chest, you're going to call that's not modest. Well, the question, of course, is, well, why is that not modest? In other words, the Supreme Court famously said, what is the definition of pornography? I don't know, but when I see it, I know what it is. In other words, is it just sort of some sort of intuition of what it just, that feels modest and that doesn't feel modest? I mean, can we apply a principle?
Well, I think in general, the kind of point is that if you're revealing too much skin, then you're really putting forth your your physicalness, like your body, ahead of like your spirituality or like your soul. So I think part of this whole discussion is that should like the body and your skin should be like secondary. You shouldn't be like forcing that upon people. That should be like the main driver to you.
So you're focusing upon the sexual provocativeness of the outfit. You're
right.
That a sexually provocative outfit is not modest. Is that the totality of modesty?
Maybe not 100%, but that's probably like 75% of it.
Okay. All right. We shall see. All right. I will not reveal the punchline this early in the class because then we'd be done. No, we're actually getting to that's also has nothing to do with the parsha. So we're gonna actually get to the parsha. So let's have all right, Sean, Bavakasha, read this is fairly close to the beginning of the parsha. Yeah.
Separate your brother Aaron and his sons from among the Israelites and bring them close to you so that Aaron and his sons, Nadav, Avihu, Eleazar, and Itamar, can become priests to me. Make sacred vestments that are both dignified and beautiful for your brother Aaron.
Well, so the Hebrew word is lekavod, literally for honor or glory, l'tiferet, and for beauty. Okay.
Speak to everyone who is naturally talented, to whom I have granted a spirit of wisdom, and let them make Aaron's vestments. These vestments will then be used to consecrate him and make him a priest to me.
All right, so basically they become part of their inauguration into becoming priests, going from being a regular Jew to becoming a priest, is putting on the clothes, okay? Go on. Sean, you're on mute, Sean.
Oh, these are the vestments that they shall make: a breastplate, the ephod, a robe, a knitted tunic, a turban, and a sash. Make them as sacred vestments for Aaron and his sons so that they will be able to be priests to me.
Okay, so the Torah is going to talk in more detail, but basically Aaron, the high priest, is going to get 8 articles of clothing. And the regular priest, regular Kohen, can have 4, okay? So it's 4, which the regular Kohen wears, which you call the lavan, the white. Basically, it's sort of a long shorts underneath made out of linen, which goes from his midriff down to his knees. That's underneath. He wears a linen robe. He has a sash, and he has a turban. That's a regular Kohen. And on top of that, the Kohen Gadol has another 4 more garments, which is going to be another robe on top of that. Plus, he has a ephod, which is a sort of a thing that holds the golden breastplate, which has the 12 stones. And he has a gold ornament on his forehead that says Kodesh LaHashem, holy to God. Okay? Now, I'll start off with the most basic question. What is the purpose of making special clothes for the Kohen and the Kohen Gadol? Why can't you just wear Shabbos best? You're going to work in the base of Mikdash. I understand. You got to dress up. It's an important job. Why are there special clothes? Why do you guys think? And I think we'll see. There's not one answer. But I want to hear from you guys.
I guess on the most basic level, like special clothes, so they like stand out from everybody else because they're like the high priest, so that they should stand out.
But we just had a whole conversation about modesty, Sean, and now you're telling me that this guy's gonna be wearing these elaborate clothing with jewels and gold. So isn't that against the principle of modesty in some way or another? Where's the humility?
All right, that's a good point. I want to think about that.
Okay. What do you guys, Suzanne? So what's the point? And in fact, it's lekavod tiferet. dignified and beautiful.
It's an honor to God. They're presenting themselves to God. So you really have to dress up.
Okay. So and why not just wearing your own personal Shabbos best? Why is that not enough?
Well, this really differentiates them because they are different. They've earned this. It also, I think, makes them feel different. And then it's okay. the whole thing.
As they say, looking good, feeling good.
Right.
All right. So Suzanne's, first of all, Suzanne answered your question, Sean. She says, it's not for their personal honor. They're wearing this special clothing and they only wear it when they're in the temple doing the service as a function of showing glory to Hashem. It's not to Aaron's honor per se, right? It's showing honor to God. That's what we're going to see. That's one of the answers presented.
So it's like their uniform during their like service.
That we have another one. Exactly. We see in general there's an idea of a uniform. Now, of course, if you're a surgeon, okay, and you wear, whether you're wearing your surgeon's outfit, okay, or you're not, it's not going to affect your skill level. In other words, a surgeon if a doctor is a surgeon at Mount Sinai Hospital, and he's wearing the Mount Sinai Hospital official scrubs. Or not, it's not going to affect his ability to do his job. So why are they? What's the utility of it? What's the value of that? And I think the hospital metaphor has actually an additional idea here.
Well, you know, he's not, or she is not, a nurse or something else that cleans bedpans or whatever. So, you know, that's the surgeon. It's a sterile, or hopefully not necessarily, but it's to be used in a sterile setting.
Well, right, so number one, it has a value to identify. In other words, it's one of issue of identity. In other words, in the hospital, the reason why the surgeon wears one outfit, the physician's assistant wears another outfit, the nurse wears yet another outfit, the technician wears yet another outfit, and the volunteer candy striper wears yet another outfit. You know, and the clergy person, the chaplain wears another outfit. It's important to identify a role. So you could say another purpose of the special one is because identifying that he is differentiated from the Jewish people with a new job. In fact, okay, now... Now, you said something, Suzanne, which I want you to expand upon. You said, well, it'll also make him feel better. Well, what do you mean by that? Why do I want him to feel better or feel different?
The surgeon or anyone?
The Kohen.
Well, he's earned this right, and he needs to act in such a way. He can't be lack the... I'm thinking he can't lack the confidence and the, he needs to present himself in such a way that is deserving to serve God in such a way.
Oh, so you're saying you're weaving actually two ideas. On one hand, you're saying the idea is that by wearing the priestly clothing, that will give him the confidence to do the job properly. That was one idea you said. And another idea you're saying is that no, that if he's wearing the priestly clothing, he will recognize that he bears the responsibility of doing the national service, that he has an important job to do, And the clothing, the uniform, is really focusing his attention on the important matter at hand.
Yes.
So are you saying A or B or both?
I think it's both because I feel like it's connected.
Okay. All right, so notice already, we've not yet, this, by the way, the exercising that we're doing right now is the way to learn Chumash, which is to read the unit, which we did, identify the clear question, and then on our own, develop our own theories, okay? Now, the role of the Mefarshim, of the commentators, we're going to do two. There are more, but I don't want to make it overwhelming. Is to see, well, after we lay out on the table our personal theories, what did the Mefarshim, the great commentators on the Chumash, have to say, and compare and contrast their thoughts to our thoughts, and and see, that's really, I would say, really establishing a good, coherent reading of the Chumash. You know what I'm saying? No, this is. In other words, yes, we're learning Parsha Tetzava, this Parsha of the week, which is important. But I also want you to take notice, I'm underlying here a manner of methodology here. Here we have a story that Aaron and his sons, the Kohen and the Kohen Gadol and the Kohanim, are getting this very attractive uniform. And we had a conversation about modesty. Yet the guys walk around with 14 jewels, 12 jewels on his breastplate, 2 jewels on his thing, all with inlaid in gold. He's got a gold plate on his head. Everything's made out of fine linen. Okay. The Ramban, who I didn't quote, but I'll tell it to you off, he says, the clothing was mirrored based upon the royal clothing of that time. So really, Aaron and his 4 sons were really wearing, for honor and for glory, was really, they were, the Ramban's theory is, they're really wearing royal clothing. Now, Suzanne's point is, well, for good reason. Theory number one, because the glory is not for them, the glory is to Hashem. They're serving Hashem, the glory is to Hashem. That's the one. Two, or the second theory we had on the table here is that for them to understand they should feel confident because they're doing important, they should not view it as just a regular activity. And the three is that they should focus upon the importance that they are representing. They're not just doing service for themselves. They are serving on behalf of the Jewish people. They're what they call a shliach tibur, a messenger of the community. Very much like the chazan. The chazan will say prayers or lead the prayers for the community. So that's a very important responsibility. All right. So we're going to take it. So I'm going to read and translate the Avram ben Rambam. This is the Rambam's son. They found in the Geniza, they have a partial manuscript, which I think is in the Oxford University, which goes through his comments on the Chumash from the book of Bereishit and most of Shemot. Now, what's interesting about Avram ben Rambam's commentary is that he was born to the Rambam late in his life. And when Avram ben Rambam turned 18, his father died. He was the child of the Rambam's second wife. His first wife and his first daughter died. Again, remember, you're talking about a world where a very primitive medicine and, getting married, when people died in childbirth all the time, it's just a very, from a medical standpoint, very difficult time. So he had another child, Avram, who, of course, took over the leadership of Egypt afterwards. And not only that, his son did, and then his grandson. So I think it's 5-6 generations from the Rambam's family maintained the leadership and were great Torah scholars and judges in the Egyptian community. But one thing that's very interesting is that you get a little insight, what he will always quote, what his grandfather, the Rambam, is Rav Moshe ben Maimon. So his father was named Maimon, right? So he'll quote, this is what Maimon said on this particular pasuk, right? Or this is what my dad said. In other words, it's a very family affair. In other words, I'm going to tell you what, and this is my idea. And you'll also hear his favorite Perush, his favorite commentator that he goes to is Rabbi Sajagon, who was lived in the 900s in Baghdad. So Sajagon's commentary on Chumash, he wrote the commentary, also was the first one to translate the Chumash into Arabic, called the Tafsir. So Jews in Israel, in the Middle East, for hundreds of years, learned Chumash with an Arab translation. Like we look at the art scroll, that was their art scroll, the Tafsir. Okay, so he quotes that a lot. Also, Ibn Ezra he quotes. Anyway, so I'm just going to read what he writes. I'm going to read and translate. Vasita pigde kodesh, you shall make holy garments. All right, he says, Hakadusha bivagadim bishte panim. There are two aspects of the holiness of these garments. Achat, number one. That no one is else allowed. Kodesh means holy, but more accurately translated as designated or separated. So what's the halacha? Is that no one else is allowed to wear these clothing. Only the Kohen can wear the Kohen clothing. If I, as a non-Kohen, put them on, that's a grave violation. Okay? They're big day Kodesh. They're dedicated to that service. Number two. They're only allowed to wear them at the time of serving in the temple, on the Mishkan, and in his place. Now, they can't be like tooling around town wearing the Kohen garment. In other words, which goes back to what Suzanne's saying, it's not about they got a beautiful $10,000 suit and they get to show off. No, it's purely their service in the temple. Now, interesting, the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, when he identifies the laws surrounding the garment, he calls it, it's in a section in the Mishnah Torah called Klei HaMikdash, the vessels of the temple, V'ha'ovdim bo, and those who serve in it, which means that in a certain sense, the Kohen and the Kohen Gadol, when they go into the temple, they're in a certain sense part of the mechanism of that. In other words, their personal identity. In other words, another aspect of a uniform, which we brought out, is that when a Marine on day one of his basic training gets a haircut, shaved down, and puts on the uniform, at that moment, a great part of his personal identity has been removed. And now he's being subsumed into a larger entity called the Marine Corps. And for the next 5 years of his tour, his identity is primarily a warrior of the Marine Corps. Similarly, a Kohen and a Kohen Gadol, they put on the Kohen clothes. It really, another reason aspect of the uniform is that it's really de-emphasizing their personal identity. Lord, when a same thing. That's the purpose of the of uniforms in general. When the surgeon walks in to the operating theater at Mount Sinai Hospital, his identity of a dad or a father or a grandfather or a partner or as a son is irrelevant now. He is a tool of the hospital. He is a surgeon. That's the purpose of another aspect of a uniform. Let's go on to his next comment. Umaymer l'kavo teferet. And when the Torah says that the garment should be for honor and glory, biur shehatipul b'minim hashonim b'asiyatam b'ashlemut shifareish od heim od But when the Torah is going to talk about the great care of the various materials used in the construction of these garments and their absolute completeness, they will produce glory and, you know, honor when they, to whom who wears them, in the eyes of all who sees them. So according to the Ayin Ram, what is the purpose of the purpose of the excellence of the clothing? What do you guys say? It says that when they put them on, it will be honorable and glory, that they will have honor and glory in the eyes who all see them. So what's the purpose of the beautifulness of the garments?
Almost for their own status in some way.
100%, that they should be perceived as being of a completely different rank. It's not, in other words, the way that Suzanne was taken was a little bit more altruistic. It's for glory for Hashem. That doesn't contradict that. Dr. Ram saying, no, it's that they should be glorified by these garments, that they should be viewed as being in a different rank. And that goes back to what he said earlier. They're Kodesh, they're separated, they're designated because nobody else is allowed to wear them. And only that, they can't wear them wherever they want, only when they are serving in the temple. So another aspect of the clothing is to give them a, we said, this goes one of our opening statements, clothing is hardly ever for just the utility of protection from the elements. It's about putting on your persona, your image, your identity. So when the Kohen puts on his Kohen clothing, he is now being perceived as being, I am the instrument of the national service. I reflect the office of the priesthood. I'm part of the educated class of the Jewish people. So that's what he does by putting on those clothing, so that people understand that, they sense that. Okay, so that's Avraham and Ram. We go on to the next commentator, the Ralbag. I didn't get a chance to translate this out for you guys, but I will translate it now, on the fly. Here we go. We are commanded that the clothing should be designated for the service, and they should be for honor and for glory. Why? This beauty and honor for God may be exalted, which cannot be ignored. Basically the same idea what Suzanne said. Suzanne had the same idea as the Ralbag had in the late 1200s. Okay? But he wrote it out. Next, and it will also be a cause for them to meditate in their thoughts about God during the service. In other words, not they're doing a mechanical act. It's a lot, because remember, our prayer and the service of the temple are parallel. So it's about focus, a mindful focus on Hashem. So the clothing is there to keep them in the zone, to keep them in, using the term, they keep their game face on. And they will not get distracted in their thoughts to something else. And they should see themselves that they're not on the same level than they were before they started, got involved in this particular service. In other words, the special clothing they put on is to really remind them and to focus them and to anchor them that they are now, they're not the same people. They have to really, in a certain sense, stretch they got to really extend themselves mentally and spiritually when they're doing this national service. And the clothing are there, instrumental to keep them in that zone. He goes on, Kishikvar nifnasu b'gvul ha-kedusha nifla b'lhushim elu b'abagam. And they enter into this holy, wondrous arena with these clothing, when they put on these clothing, okay? To put it very simply, the Ralbag has two reasons. One, it's an honor to God. And number two, it puts them in the Kedusha zone. All right? Now, we have a talus. We have things that can do that. Now, all right, let me have somebody read. Now we get back to an English text. All right, Suzanne, this is the Rambam's description about clothing. Let's get into it.
Okay. A Torah sage's clothing should be attractive and clean. It is forbidden that a blood or fat stain or the like be found on this garment. He should not wear regal garb, clothes of gold and purple, which draw everyone's attention, nor the dress of the poor, which shames its wearers, but attractive garments of the middle range.
All right, stop right there. So what is the Rambam's definition of modest clothing?
Definitely has to be clean.
Clean, attractive and clean, and third quality. Yeah. What's the third quality?
Middle range.
You can't look like, you know, and you can't draw attention to yourself either, as is a disgrace because you're wearing ripped clothes. Clothing of a poor person, or going back to, well, you know, or a regal clothing. So going back to what I was asking David is that if a guy buys a $10,000 suit, it depends. Is it a $10,000 suit that makes him look like Elton John, who part of his marketing campaign, or Elton John had a problem. I don't know if you guys, does everybody enjoy Elton John? Phenomenal.
Sure.
Great singer, great tunes. There's all, early on, he recognized he had a little problem. Here's this short British dude that plays piano and is not the most attractive guy on the block. So he's a piano player who writes phenomenal songs. So he recognized, as been, you know, of course, Cher, as were, of course, Madonna, and of course, Lady Gaga, after him, recognized that that basically, in order for me to be successful or more successful, I need to create. When I get on stage, my clothing are not an outfit; it's a costume, and I got to be visually, you know, flamboyant. Okay, I got to stand out. So everything, you know, and he does. Even when he's not even on stage, what he dresses on is like, you know, over the top. You know? So that really, so going back to Sean's point, Sean, you're focused. What's the issue of the woman wearing suggestive? What's the problem with a suggestive outfit?
Well, it's just revealing too much.
But what's the problem with that? Go on to the wrong.
Suggests her intentions.
Right. That's the whole point. Modesty is not it's about drawing attention to yourself based upon your physicality. Right. So for a woman, she has a greater ability to draw people's attention based on her sexuality. But a guy can do the same thing by wearing a Elton John outfit. You know what I mean? He's going to wear, he's got an ostrich feather attached to his hat. He's got, costume jewelry, studded, sunglasses. His outfit looks like he's a part of the Sgt. Pepper Lonely Heart Band. I mean, he walks into shul. He looks like a what?
So is it like a hierarchy though? Like is revealing too much skin like worse than wearing gold and purple or like a costume?
I'm saying yes, because it adds another problem. Another problem is it's adding it's sexualizing the community. And it's also bad for the woman because basically she's going to get a lot of attention for her sexual identity. And the terrorists try to say that, yes, your sexual identity has a role to play, but fundamentally that's a private affair for your husband. And you want to people not get distracted by your sexuality to be able to perceive who you are. So that's equality. The clothing should be attractive. Number two, they should be clean. Number three, they should not draw everyone's attention. You know what I mean? So let's go to the MG situation. It's Shabbos morning at MG. 150 people come on in there. So you want people, if they look at you, say, he looks nice, she looks nice. You know what I'm saying? But not like, whoa. The whoa is not a good term. You don't want to be, that's not modest clothing.
In terms of not wearing the regal garb, like the certain colors, is that why some of the like yeshivish type people only wear like black and white?
So the story, I think they would say that they're wearing, that's how they call modest clothing. It's basically, you know, zero color, black and white. And really, it's ironic. The story on the yeshiva clothing is largely they're wearing the clothing of the Polish aristocrats of the 17th century. You know, now part of it is not. I mean, if you're wearing a hat which is made out of fur, a shtreimel, that's a little bit. You know, it's not as a little standout-ish, I guess. But you know what I mean. But that became part of the black and white when the two communities merged after the Holocaust. The two communities, so the more, like when my father went, just give you a little story, little biographical story. My father, who was a Baal Tshuva, went to a Tel's yeshiva in the mid-50s for high school. That yeshiva had transplanted from Lithuania. Lithuania got demolished in the Holocaust. Horrible, you know, the Mir Yeshiva was, you know, there's a famous story, was escaped through the Sukihara and went to Shanghai. And a number of members of the Tel's yeshiva got out. So in that day, everybody dressed in the 50s, like you put it, attractive, clean, middle-range clothing, which basically means they look like Ward Cleaver of, you know, they wore like 50s clothing, you know what I mean? They wore, you know, jacket and tie, but they wore like a blue jacket, you know what I mean? And nobody wore black except for the Rosh Hashiva, who wore a special Rosh Hashiva outfit. Because they were anti-Hasidic. They were virulently misnagged. But those two communities eventually in the 60s and 70s sort of merged, and the yeshivish community through the 70s started to adopt a variation of the Hasidic dress, which basically means, you know, a black suit and white shirt and a hat, black hat. But that's sort of the story how that happened. It wasn't intrinsic to that community. It was sort of like their take on the Hasidic community was also wore the black and white, but they'd have different, very specific clothing. All right, let's continue on. Suzanne, keep on going.
His flesh should not be visible under his clothing, as is the case when one wears the exceptionally sheer linen garments produced in Egypt.
All right, it goes into it. Now, this is not talking about a woman. He's not, the Talmud Chacham is a man. He's not being sexually provocative, but to wear see-through clothing, sheer clothing, you know, where people could see his body, it's also, again, it grabs your attention. If somebody walks into with see-through clothing, fishnet clothing, that's certainly female, but even male, okay? Go on.
His clothes should not drag on the ground like the dress of the haughty, but should extend to the heel, and his sleeves should extend to his fingers.
All right, so their cloak thing, you know, like in that 17th century, 18th century kind of thing, they would, you know, have a train, you know, like in the French, prior to the French Revolution, everybody wore these very flamboyant trains. But that's basically arrogant. So you can't look. There's another way of being grabbing attention. You look like you dress in a pompous way. Now that's going to be subject to your time and your place. It's going to be different. Go on.
He should not let his cloak hang down, for that creates an impression of haughtiness, except on the Sabbath, if he has no change of cloak.
So we're not so familiar with this medieval outfits, but basically, if your outfit comes across as being a pompous person, I guess like a British, you know what I mean? If a guy dressed up as a British lord, you know what I'm saying? That would be a problem. It's not just getting attention, but you're looking like you're part of the group, the haughty group, the arrogant group, the pompous group. All right, go on.
In the summer, he should not wear shoes that have often been mended and have many patches. He may do so in the rainy season if he is poor. He should not go out in the marketplace perfumed or with perfumed clothes, nor should he put perfume on his hair. However, he is permitted to rub perfume on his body if he does so in order to remove filth. Similarly, he should not go out alone at night unless he has a set time to go out for his studies. All of these restrictions are instituted because of possible suspicion of immorality.
All right. So apparently also if the guy's like wearing cologne, I mean, you know, so to wear deodorant just to remove smell, that's a good thing. But to wear like, I would call it excessive colognes and perfumes, which is basically, what's the goal of that?
To attract the opposite sex.
Exactly. As the Axe body spray says, that if you put this stuff on, you know, women will of course run to you. Okay. So having, you know, I guess it's called excessive cologne or whatever, you know, having a very distinct scent, it's identified with you know, basically picking up women. So that's obviously also, in order, also, even though that he's not doing that, but he has to be, he can't even look, he has to look above. He's not that guy. All right, so then let's make this extremely practical. When you go shopping for clothes, what are their criteria you should consider? Here we go. We're basically doing take number two. Yeah.
So it shouldn't draw attention to you.
But what's the first thing is, okay. First of all, the clothing should be attractive. Yeah. They should be clean. They should be in the middle range. Now, middle range is obviously relative to your community. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, which of course, to the goal is what, as Sean said, you're not standing out as a flamboyant person with your clothing, and that has the female expression, you know, like a Lady Gaga, or the, you know, Madonna, even less than that. Or you show up to shul, a woman show up to shul with a Dior, you know, like literally a designer outfit, which is like clearly like just whoa, you know what I mean? Just like over the top. That's what's not modest.
It's interesting because you see some people that have. Now, you know, a lot of designers have their own special symbol, and you see a lot of people with one symbol here, one symbol there, symbols all over, which it's kind of obnoxious, and I'm thinking that's not exactly modest, because they're covered.
I mean, again, if in other words, if a person, it's all based upon context. If it's something that's drawing everybody's attention, typically, you know, certainly for women's clothing, the designer label is on the inside of the dress or jacket or blouse, not on the outside necessarily. Now, you know, the classic, you know, and if a guy's wearing the old Ralph Lauren polo shirts. We got the little polo symbol by the chest, but I think that's still within the moderate range. It's not like over the top, like, oh, he's wearing a white polo shirt, you know. A three-button polo shirt is still pretty moderate. You know what I'm saying? So that's now insofar as Shabbos is concerned, you know, where I would say more women because of the social pressure is to dress, you know, to gain tremendous amount of attention. Everybody. Then guys have the opposite problem. What is the opposite problem that guys have when it comes to Shabbos, let's say, and Yom Tov?
They're all dressed the same?
Well, that's not a problem. You know, in other words, on Shabbos, we, like a Kohen, have to dress up to show honor to the Shabbos. The guy challenge is really what I call the underdressing problem. In other words, I know it's Shabbos, but I want to dress like it's Sunday. I want to wear my weekend outfit. So that's also a lack. In other words, there's excessive overdressing when you want everybody's attention. That's immodest. And there's underdressing where I'm not giving cover, in order, by wearing clothing for Shabbos. It's called Kavod Shabbat. So if I'm underdressing, I'm saying this is not a big deal. Now, while we don't have the same responsibilities as a Kohen, but we have to wear, distinct clothing. So that's the idea. So that goes to our question of how to shop. So you want to get nice, clean, mid-range, clothing that does not, that you don't stand out for your clothes. Now, let me ask you a question. Does this squelch or suppress your own personal fashion style? What do you say? Is a person's fashion sense now being suppressed, being crushed?
I guess that would depend on the person.
Okay, what do you mean?
Some people really do like to dress flamboyant in general.
Right.
Others don't mind just, you know, blending in or being moderate.
Right. So, if a person is trying to get that ego satisfaction for being flamboyant, hey, look at me, that's exactly what the Torah is trying to educate away from, A. But within a certain category, there is literally an immense amount of choices within the category of attractive, clean, mid-range, not draws attention to yourself. That really is the vast majority of clothes. So a person likes, a person likes this look or that look or the third look or the fourth look or the fifth look. It's all within, you have the ability to subspecify what clothing you can wear. You know what I'm saying? So you're not really being, as long as the clothing are not like, screaming, hey, look at me. All right. So it's not really, you're allowed to be, you're supposed to be attractive, but not to be like, drawing attention or, you know, drawing attention either by over-sexualized, drawing attention because it's clear, over-the-top expense. Draw attention because it's so ripped and torn and shoddy-looking, or so over-the-top because he looks like an arrogant person with dress, the look of that. So those are all the elements. But those are the principles. But the Kohen, he had to dress for in a way that drew attention because he had a specific role, show honor to Hashem, as we identified. He has to know him. He has to focus to remind him about his important mission. Number two, number three, he has to be viewed as being different and separated in his special uniform. It's not about public image. His identity is really, his personal identity is being lost in the greater role of being the national servant of Hashem. That really is the four elements there. All right. That's basically the idea. Okay.